All right, good afternoon, Army of Angels. Today I'm with Heather Gardner, who's a parishioner out at St. Patrick's in Hutto, and more importantly, the executive director of the Central Texas Coalition for Life. And Heather, welcome to another edition of the Hometown Heroes.
Glad to be here.
Before we talk about the coalition and all the great work you're doing, I want to talk a little bit about you. Can you tell us kind of a little thumbnail about where you grew up and school? And
So I actually was born in Houston, grew up in Spring, Texas, which is right outside of Houston, and I never moved actually until I went to college. At first, I was actually going to go to the University of North Texas. I was very indecisive about what I wanted to do. It seemed like everyone around me, my friends and my cousins who were around my age, all knew what they wanted to do for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. They had it all planned out, and I did not. I knew what my interests and passions were, and I knew that it was just a wide scale of things that I was interested in. And so I thought, okay, I'll get an engineering degree because that would be more of a secure kind of job, right? And I had a lot of engineers in my family, and also I love music, and so somehow I'll get a music degree, and I don't know what I'll do with that. And so UNT it was, and then I had visited the campus. I visited Texas A&M as well. I had friends there, but about a month before I graduated high school, I decided there's no way I can't go to A&M, and the largest reason was actually because of St. Mary's Catholic Center, mm-hmm. because there was such a strong presence there, and I knew the most important thing to me was to grow in my faith. I felt like there were many things that I just didn't understand about my faith, and I wanted to grow, and I just had this sense that I would not be able to grow in my faith at UNT because I looked for the Catholic center there, and at the time, there wasn't a strong presence. I'm told that there is a much better Catholic presence there now, but there wasn't then. I don't even know where I would be now had I not gone to Texas A&M because eventually I got degrees in sociology and music. I had taken sociology as like a basic, like a just kind mm-hmm. of an extra course, and psychology and a few other classes. And I just really loved sociology mainly because it made me understand my faith better. Mm. And so that was ultimately why I chose to get a bachelor's in that. And then, of course, it's super vague. So what do you do with a sociology right. degree? And I eventually got offered a job at the Coalition for Life. They had told me before I graduated that they had been looking at me to replace my friend Erica, who was at the time working there. And she was getting ready to she was engaged, getting ready to get married and move out of town at the end of that school year. So they had plans to have me come in and take her position, whereas I did not see myself working in the position. I just thought, I really held that up on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't think that I was cut out for the position. I thought that somebody needs to be much more educated and experienced than me, and that I just didn't have what it takes. And so they actually offered me the job several times, and I turned it down several times. So Sean Carney was the executive director of the Coalition for Life at the time. He pulled me aside one time and said, hey, I want to have a lunch meeting with you. And what I didn't realize was that I was actually in an interview. I don't think I realized fully when I agreed to go to lunch with him that it was going to be an interview. And so I listened to him and I shared with him my concerns. And I just ultimately said, I just don't think I'm cut out for this. I think you need somebody that's much better qualified. I don't know how many times I said that. And by the end of that lunch meeting, he's like, okay, give me an answer by Monday. And I'm like, I don't think you're listening to me. You know, I of course took that seriously. I prayed about it. I had already been praying about it, but I prayed about it more. And I had actually, you know, I didn't have a plan for what I was going to do after college. And so I just thought, God, just open doors for me. Like, send me a sign, send me something of where I should be, even if it's not something that I should be long term. And so I had a couple of other I had applied to a couple of jobs, and those fell through right all around that same time. And so then I told him, okay, it looks like, you know, all these other doors are closing, so I guess this is it. I guess this is what I should be doing for now. And I thought, you know, it'll probably be temporary, and then I can decide, you know, what to do later on. And that was 12 years ago. So... God definitely had quite a few other plans that I didn't expect. But what was crazy was, so I was happy to be sticking around in College Station because I really had made a lot of great friendships and relationships there, and I felt like I still needed to stay there longer to continue to grow in my faith more before I was ready to, you know, move into possibly a completely new town and with not knowing anybody. And so... it worked out really well. I was glad that I did that. I continued to be involved as I could with St. Mary's, with the music ministry. They actually had me come and speak for Aggie Awakening. And so I gave this prayer talk. This was the same summer, right after I had started. And I talked a lot about praying on the sidewalk in front of the abortion facility and how powerful it is, how scary it can be at first, but then ultimately how powerful that is. And I talked about this woman named Abby Johnson in my talk, who was the director of the Planned Parenthood. I didn't talk a lot about that. I briefly mentioned, you know, people such as Abby Johnson, who's the director of the Planned Parenthood, we need to be praying for her too, because nobody's sin is beyond the, you know, power and love and mercy of God. And so, but even saying those things, and of course I had definitely come to a better understanding of God's mercy being involved volunteer-wise with the Coalition for Life, because I did see abortion workers as enemies, you know, in the beginning. And when it was introduced to me by the Coalition for Life that we need to pray for them and that, like, there's a possibility they could convert on this issue and leave, that was like, what? Like, I hadn't thought of that before. And clearly I hadn't read a lot of the stories of the people that came before that. However, a few months had gone by, and I was really having a hard time spiritually transitioning from being a volunteer to a full-time worker in the movement. Yeah. It was spiritual warfare. I mean, it was when I was a volunteer, but it was just more so because all of your energy pretty much is being focused on this. And so I was blessed to be receiving spiritual direction from this Italian nun that was with the Apostles of the Interior Life, Sister Raffaella. So she really helped me through a lot of this. And one day she said, you know, I think you need to read this book. I think it will really help you. And the book that she gave me was by Norma McCorvey called Won by Love. And Norma McCorvey, of course, is the Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade. I didn't know that Jane Roe had had a conversion and was pro-life. Of course, this piqued my interest. I read the book and, you know, highly recommend people read it if they haven't read her story. It's really powerful. Essentially, she really talks a lot about how the people on the sidewalk had a huge effect on her, how God really worked through them, even through so much anger that she was dealing with and so many demons she was dealing with. And the way that she treated them was, you know, at times really horrible. But they continued to show up. They continued to show her love and kindness and speak truth to her. And ultimately, you know, her heart was converted on the issue. And I just thought, oh my gosh, like the Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade went through this huge conversion. And so she converted to the pro-life issue. She converted to Christianity, eventually to Catholicism. And then 1 month later, I'm sitting on a big cushy chair in our counseling room. We had a counseling room at the Coalition for Life office. And the director of the Planned Parenthood had walked in and was sitting on the couch across from us, crying her eyes out, talking about how she didn't want to work in the abortion industry anymore. So the timing was just insane.
Yeah.
Just after reading that book, and then a month later, Abby leaving and coming to the Coalition for Life. And even though I read that book, it was still like I was doubtful of what I was seeing in front of me, even after reading of a true conversion story on this very issue. So, you know, if people have read Unplanned, it mentions in there how I was very skeptical of Abby. I didn't believe her necessarily. I didn't know if I could believe her. So she's crying her eyes out. She's telling us what she saw in the ultrasound. She's telling us of a lot of these horrible things that she witnessed and why, you know, all these things, reasons why she didn't want to be in the abortion industry anymore. And I'm what some people would say pessimistic, but I like to think of it as more practical and realistic. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, this woman has turned the sprinklers on us. Mm-hmm. She has called our office and been rude. She's been rude to us on the sidewalk. Not always. We had pleasant conversations with her too. But I'm thinking of all the negative things. And I'm thinking she was so sure of herself and she was so this. And man, if Planned Parenthood's playing a trick on us, boy, are they pulling all the stops. You know, I mean, this is all going through my head. Instead of just like, surrendering to what, you know, what was in front of us and believing that God could change even her heart. And so it took me a little while to warm up to Abby. And I even remember my coworker, Karen, and she was like crying the whole time sitting next to Abby. And then before, when Abby was saying that she needed to leave to go back to work before they suspected anything, Karen writes her phone number down on a little slip of paper and then just slides it across the couch. And I was like, Karen, are you crazy? Like, this is, we can't trust her right now. What are you doing? And she wrote her cell phone number down, you know? And so as I kind of processed all this within the coming days and weeks, I started feeling really guilty for how I was feeling, yeah. Doubting her, doubting everything that she told us and all that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people would say, well, I would have done the same thing. I know I certainly am not the only one, but we, you know, just wanted to really embrace her and protect her because we knew that she was in for the fight of her life. You know, everybody kind of knows the rest of that story if you've read the book or seen the movie.
Speaking of the movie, for those of our listeners who don't know, you're actually our first hometown hero that's a movie star. So can you talk a little bit about how you got involved with the movie itself? I mean, I know you have a great friendship with Abby and Doug, but
yeah.
Can you talk about just the movie itself?
When they filmed Unplanned in spring of 2018, and what was crazy was all the years leading up to that, conversations that Abby and Doug and I had and some of our other friends, her book came out like a year and a half after she left Planned Parenthood. And so between the book and the movie, we had always thought, man, if your books ever turn into a movie, if your stories ever turn into a movie, and then we'd be like, well, we would have this actor play, you know, of course it's all like top rated actors, yes, yes. That would never in a million years, you know. But one thing that Abby said realistically that she wanted and she hoped for was that she thought it would be really neat to have their clients, their quitters, as we call mm-hmm. them, play the people on the sidewalk, and her pro-life friends, if some of them played workers mm-hmm. inside the facility and kind of flip-flop that. It didn't exactly work out like that. Unfortunately, we couldn't get any of the quitters to play the prayer volunteers on the sidewalk. However, kind of at the last minute, I was able to play an abortion worker. I got in scrubs, and I ended up filming this scene that was a really serious scene, actually, with the POC lab, which is, of course, products of conception, where they take the remains of the babies after the procedures. And so I played a nurse or a clinician who was receiving the remains in the dishes, essentially, and bringing it over to the light box that they have where they lay out all the parts. And so it wasn't that extensive. It just basically showed me with the pass-through door and then doing that and turning around, and that was it, while Abby was talking over that scene. But it was an interesting experience. I thought, this is my only chance if I ever want to be in a Hollywood film, right? And what was crazy was, so lots of things don't go by the schedule. Mm-hmm. Lots of things are miscommunicated. Abby has to leave the next day to go on a trip. We were going to actually film that scene together. Abby was supposed to be a nurse with me in that scene. And they thought, okay, we're going to film this scene with two different people because we may decide that Abby's going to be too distracting, you know, because she's going to be too recognizable. And so we may have to use the other scene with another person and you. And so I'm just thinking to myself, she is going to be too distracting. You're going to decide that, you know, ultimately that scene with her is going to be cut. But I didn't even think this scene was going to make it with me in it. I just thought there's no way. It's so minor and it's so short. And I didn't expect that. I just was glad to be there for the experience. So this rumor went around when Abby was leaving that everybody else was leaving with her, even though we told them, we'll see you in the morning. And they said, okay, your scene is going to be first thing, so you have to be on time. You have to be early to get ready, da-da-da. Okay, fine. Somehow, after we left, a rumor had gone around that I was leaving. So they were frantically trying to find somebody else that was going to fill in as an extra. So I get there, and thankfully I get there earlier, and all the way from the entrance of the door to the back of the warehouse where the producers and the directors were, people were stopping saying, oh, you're still here? I thought you were gone. Oh, you might want to get back there. They're about to film with someone else. And I'm like freaking out. What? No, this is my scene. This is the only time I get to be, like, I'm you know, nobody's going to see this, right? But I'm like, this is my only time to experience this. And so I go all the way back and I get to the directors and they tell me the same thing. We thought you left. No, why did you guys think I left? I'm here. And they're like, we're filming in 5 minutes. The wardrobe was not on site. You had to actually take a shuttle to the wardrobe place. And so I like ran like I've never ran before. I went and got the shuttle and I was like, don't you dare leave. I'm going to jump right back on here in a minute. And I was just praying that wardrobe still had my clothes on a hanger and didn't already take them and put them in the wash or whatever. So thankfully they still had it. They had it labeled. I threw on the scrubs and the shoes and whatever. And I went back and I made it in 5 minutes. And they were like, okay, like we're ready. I need you to give me about 15 seconds to catch my breath. Like, I understand we're on a tight schedule, but hang on. Like, this was not my mistake. And so there was no, like, makeup or hair or anything. It was just like, you know, good thing that you looked halfway decent for this because we're not going to take time to fix you up or anything. So
in a very compelling movie, that scene in her conversation was a very compelling part of the movie. As you're doing that, there had to be something going through your mind in terms of what was going on and what that meant to Abby's story.
I do remember thinking one of the main first thoughts that came to my head is, how am I going to explain this scene to my mom? Because I'll be so excited to call her later that day and tell her, hey, I got to film a scene in the movie, but also it's a really hard, difficult scene. So it was like a mixed feeling. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it, too. I thought about you have the abortionist, you have the other nurses, the main workers, and you have, you know, the lady who played Abby's boss. All these people are playing these prominent scenes. But there's a difference between playing these roles to endorse this work and playing these roles because you know that this is an expose on what's happening. Mm. And so, you know, you're not excited for the role because, yes, you're excited for what this represents. Like, this represents evil, and I'm so excited to play evil. But no, you know, this is so much bigger than all of us that we are embracing truth and embracing all of the backlash, you know, with that they knew they were going to get with this film because it's so countercultural and against Hollywood and all of our elitists and everybody, population controlists and all those people. Mm-hmm. And so despite that, and then knowing that they were risking, some of them, they knew they were risking their careers.
But the whole movie, that just like tore the whole curtain down around this giant corporation known as Planned Parenthood.
In the scene immediately after where Abby is in the lab with her boss and it shows the little baby.
It's not real baby.
Not a real baby, of course. No, they didn't, you know, harm any children in this movie to make this movie. But that scene, you know, that was an intact approximately 12-week baby. That was very powerful because you're seeing this, yes, they don't look like a newborn baby in terms of they're still really red and they're veiny and maybe a little alien looking, but that's what we all looked like at that stage of life. Mm-hmm. I remember I was constantly paying attention to how the audience was reacting, and I remember gasps every time with that scene because, I mean, this movie truly went where no other movie is willing to go.
We could sit around and talk about the movie all day, but I'd like to shift gears and let's talk about the coalition. What makes the Central Texas Coalition for Life different?
So there's several coalitions for life. They all have a similar main mission. Some of them have their own different ministries that they do to cater their community. When I was in College Station, because we were the closest place to the abortion facility, we were closer than any of the pregnancy centers, which were 4 or 5 miles away minimum. We decided, in addition to sidewalk ministry, which is what we were doing, we were holding prayer vigils year-round outside of the facility. but we would go and educate the community. We'd talk about fetal development. We'd talk about the procedures. We'd talk about the risks. And then, of course, we would show people there are other choices. There are other places in the community. We've done the research. Here's what they are. So that's pretty much what all the coalitions have in common and a lot of other similar sidewalk ministries. And we are very adamant about having a peaceful, prayerful approach, not condemning. Again, great example, and great that they weren't afraid to go there either in the movie where they showed the harsh, cruel pro-lifers on the sidewalk, you know, and how it was so obviously different from the peaceful people on the sidewalk. So there's lots of reasons, you know, that's a whole nother topic. With the Central Texas Coalition for Life, we don't have our own pregnancy center or anything like that. We are holding vigils outside of, we currently have three abortion facilities in Austin, so we try to maintain as much as possible prayer vigils there. But we spend a good deal of time offering educational programs as well for different groups, for men's groups, women's groups, youth groups, just a mix of groups, pastors, just educating people, because what I have found over the years is that there's a lot of people who would identify themselves as pro-life, but there's just so many people who really can't elaborate very much on what that means other than I'm against abortion. Yeah. They can't stand up to the challenges, the very real and deep challenges that the abortion industry throws and abortion supporters throw at us, right? Yeah. That are, I mean, they bring up a lot of good points. A lot of their logic is flawed. But we need to be able to, you know, as I believe it says in 1 Peter, we need to be able to have an understanding of our faith and know what it is that we believe to be able to share that with others. And so that's one of the things that we seek to do, is really to help educate ourselves so that then we can go and educate others in the community. And so
you mentioned the prayer vigils. That has to be, just kind of be a little taxing and a little intimidating.
It was a lot more challenging in the beginning, but thankfully we've built up, you know, a bigger volunteer base. We have had more staff. I'm looking for to add, you know, staff members now, so that we can continue to expand our coverage and expand our outreach. But it takes all of us. It is not something that just I can do.
So what's the future hold for the coalition?
Well, we don't exactly know yet. Of course, many people, especially regular dedicated volunteers, our board, our leadership, we're working towards and dreaming of the day where we don't have abortion facilities to pray outside of anymore. In terms of the state of the Coalition for Life, so let's say tomorrow all the abortion facilities close down, what do we do? There's a number of things we can do. I don't think we would want to dissolve, because we've got too good of a thing in terms of our educational component to just shut down because the abortion facilities are closed. And the good thing is that a lot of our volunteers are involved in multiple ways. So some of them are also volunteering regularly at pregnancy centers. And so we would want to continue to encourage folks to be involved in different ways. We may not have prayer vigils anymore outside of abortion facilities, but we would certainly still hold prayer vigils at certain times of the year, especially, you know, Roe versus Wade and different anniversaries like that. However, we would potentially, too, even have a pregnancy component of our own, a pregnancy center of our own, whether it's a mobile unit or partnering with another group. So there's a number of possibilities. I know that, you know, there's been several other cities where their abortion facility closed, where they didn't dissolve, that they continued to educate, you know, have educational opportunities, but also maybe, again, started like a pregnancy center or something like that. So it's not certain what's going to happen. But I do know that our work is never going to be done. It's not like when it's legally overturned, when Roe versus Wade is legally overturned, or when your local abortion facility is closed, that abortion is done. Abortion is ended, because they are working hard. The abortion industry is working hard right now they're preparing for an underground abortion industry, and that's already kind of happening. We know that they're illegally mailing abortion pills to people. You know, so we have to, you know, step up to those challenges and see what we can do about that and how we can try to combat that and help, again, go to places in the community where we can educate women so that they know that is not the best option for them and they don't feel like they have that as their only option. They know that there's life-affirming choices in the community. And I know more pregnancy centers are looking into starting to offer the abortion pill reversal, you know, so that because we already see the abortion pill rates rising, so we need to meet that. We need to meet that need and, you know, go into the community and tell people that there is an abortion pill reversal process.
So if I wanted to get involved or find out more about the coalition, how could I do that?
So we are on a few social media platforms. We're on Facebook and Instagram. Those are the two most active ones. We do have a Twitter account, but it's really just linked. We're not active on that. So Instagram and Facebook, you can find us at Coalition for Life or Central Texas Coalition for Life. And then our website is centraltexascoalition.com, and it's all spelled out, centraltexascoalition.com. Anybody can email me. It's my email address, heather@centraltexascoalition.com. And we're happy to, you know, set up meetings or set up any sort of either, you know, sometimes adopted days, churches that especially mm-hmm. are coming farther, like maybe from the Temple Killeen area that want to participate. We have opportunities where a church can adopt an entire day and cover that one day outside of a facility in Austin and have that full coverage. And I mean, again, I know a lot of the listeners here already know the power of prayer. They already have maybe seen Unplanned, and they know the power of sidewalk ministry. But really, it's I say that, but we really don't know the true power of it. We don't know how much the ripple effect is. You know, we had a former worker here, Jackie, who many years ago she had left the South I-35 facility. I asked her, I'm about to address our volunteers. You know, we've got upcoming events. I'd love to share anything that you would like me to share, whether it's, you know, anonymously or not. And I said, what would you want me to tell our volunteers and our supporters? And she just simply replied back with, tell them you are more present than you know. And that was powerful yeah. to me, because if you've been involved, if you've prayed on the sidewalk, especially if you've prayed intensely, like if you've gone and spent many hours, sometimes you might look at it as like, well, it's really dull. Like, you know, you're just there and it's quiet and you're praying for an hour and then you leave. But sometimes you're witnessing maybe a fight in the parking lot, or somebody sitting in their car fighting with their boyfriend, or somebody just clearly distraught, or somebody angry at us. And you just are so discouraged, and you think all we're doing is causing problems here. We're not really helping. What are we really doing? Because I didn't see someone change their mind that day. I've never seen someone change their mind on the spot. So really, are we making a difference? You're hearing it from inside the facility. There's a reason why abortion workers and the Planned Parenthood Corporation and all these other groups are actively trying to keep us from the sidewalk. Because the angry people that are on the sidewalk, that's not the majority of folks on the sidewalk. They can try to lump us all in and make people think we're all the same. We're not. And it's becoming more and more obvious to the public that we're peaceful and we're prayerful. Why would they still try to get rid of us if we were not having an effect? Because they know we're turning away their business. They know that we're even touching the hearts of some of their employees, and they don't like that. They punish their employees if they catch them talking to us. You know, here's some good news. Like a couple of years ago, when one of the abortion facilities changed locations to be in an office complex, there's multiple offices there. We're standing on the public right of way, and their friends who were in another office, the abortion facility has friends in another office, spent $4,500 on landscaping where we stand to try to prevent us from standing there. Spiky cactus plants, giant agave plants, all these other spiky, super, you know, whatever plants. Why would they have done that if we weren't having an effect? We're literally just standing there peacefully demonstrating. And you've got these, you know, well-trained sidewalk advocates standing at the driveway, handing out information to anybody who wants it. You know, it's that simple. Majority of the, thankfully, the patrons of the other offices and people in the neighborhood have told us, wow, this is so powerful. Thank you for being here. Like, I didn't realize this place was here, kind of thing, you know? And so they're not going to spend all those efforts and all that money to get rid of people who aren't having an effect.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you. God bless all of your listeners and you guys for this wonderful ministry.